All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, something that's always perplexed me is, and I know this goes back to the Iraq War. I don't know if it was ever the case in any other wars. How long has America been having for hire mercenaries?
You know, I don't know. It's like the Foreign Legion used to.
Yeah.
You know, that you're right. The Blackwater process that started in the initial Gulf War, and then spread materially in the second invasion, such to the point where I think a significant percentage of people in combat were actually mercenaries, and much like this Wagner group, you know, that's getting a lot of publicity. We talk pejoratively about how the Russians have this dangerous and lawless group of called the Wagner group of mercenaries that they've now deployed into Ukraine, and my mind immediately goes to the Blackwater group, and you know,
right,
some of the
things that they did,
well, the war crimes they committed that ended up being a difficult question of international law as to how they would get prosecuted and whether they would be prosecuted by a military tribunal in the United States or whether they were just immune from U.S. prosecution.
Do you think that's something that is going to eventually be beneficial to this nation? Because in this article, Joe Biden wants more defense contractors to fight the new Cold War. He's already calling it the new Cold War. You and I talked about it tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that they're officially now calling this a new Cold War and then talking about using these mercenaries who, you know, aren't regulated.
Well, you know, the head of Blackwater was the brother of the Secretary of Education under Trump, this guy Prince. And you know, lots of money is to be made by these businesses who hire ex-military. You know, the ex-military working for Blackwater were earning incomes four and five times as much as they earned in the military for similar combat roles. So,
and what the average combat average Joe gets.
Well, and they aren't subject to the same kind of discipline in terms of the U.S. military disciplinary processes. So it's, very dangerous direction to move in. And it also is one that's fraught with profiteering. You know, we're creating one more industry that has a great deal of personal vested interest in world tension. And if we're going to have a very big mercenary, standing body of mercenaries who are there because of a Cold War, we'll have every reason to fan the cold flames,
yes,
of the Cold War.
So does the mercenary fight alongside American troops at some point in time? It's possible that could happen, right?
Well, I'm pretty sure they do in some fashion. I'm confident that Blackwater must have coordinated its military activities with the military of the United States in some fashion. I've never been in a field of combat, so I can't tell you exactly how that's carried out. All I can tell you is that as an American citizen, it worries me that we have a bunch of combatants who are profiteering from the combat. I mean, it's a throwback to the Roman Legion or the Foreign Legion.
So that's what made me think about it was when they said the first American soldier to die, not soldier, but the first
American citizen to die in Ukraine.
Yeah, was a 20-year-old or 21-year-old young guy who was no longer in the military, so he's hiring out his services. Somebody has hired him.
Well, there's a Ukrainian legion that was set up that has, in fact, brought in
from
all over the world and who've been hired and are getting paid for their service. I don't know whether they're getting paid in U.S. dollars or whether the U.S. dollars that are supporting the Ukrainians are converted to Ukrainian currency before they get paid. But I'm confident that the flow of money from the United States is one source of revenue that is being used for the hiring of, well, there's been British, there's Belarusians, there's all kinds of people who maybe for very good reason, good personal reasons of their own,
have decided to come in.
But there's also this whole mercenary quality to warfare these days, and we've got it happening on both sides with the Wagner Group, with mercenaries in the Ukraine, Blackwater in the United States. You know, Katie bar the door. Apparently, you know, war is a business, and we're starting
to recognize it. We then bring many of those people are being supplied with American weaponry. I mean, at some point in time.
I'm sure these people are valuable as in their Legion capacity for the Ukraine because they're already trained in American weaponry. So one of the ways, I suppose, to hand over to the Ukrainians a bunch of trained people is to allow a bunch of Americans to temporarily emigrate to Ukraine for the purpose of fighting on the Ukrainian side. You know, this happened in World War II. We had a bunch of U.S. volunteer pilots who were piloting for the British Air Force before the U.S. entered the war. We had similar kind of volunteers working in the Pacific, in the Southeast Asian area. So we had a bunch of volunteer pilots flying for the Polish Air Force, and then we had Polish Air Force pilots flying for the British Air Force. So it's long been the case that there's been this movement of international people, but it hasn't been the case that it's been quite so corporate in terms of the way it's been handled, so that we've got entities like Blackwater who are contracting with the government in very large unbid contracts to provide all kinds of security services in fields of combat.
So let's create a scenario, Sandy. Let's say, like the young guy who got killed. Let's say that person is captured by the enemy, mm-hmm. is tortured. Is he tortured as an American soldier, as an American citizen? Do we then have some responsibility to do all we can to?
Well, I think
does he have the same kind of? Is there the same kind of hue and outcry that we love the troops, and he's now one of the troops?
I think the State Department has said the right things in terms of admonishing American citizens that if they do such a thing as join the Legion, they're doing so at their own risk, and that they will not be supported by the United States government in whatever it is that happens as the result of it. But we'll find out when push comes to shove.
So they're not going to be looked at
as American combatants.
Yeah.
Well, they are American citizens who chose to go into the field of combat. And so far, the State Department has reiterated the notion that they are doing this at their own risk.
You know, Sandy, things are so complex now. They're more complex than they've ever been. And so this is the rule, not the exception. This is going to be the future of warfare in this country.
Well, it might be the future of warfare in the world, as for, you know, and it was true that the French Foreign Legion was very active in all kinds of wars, and they were essentially a mercenary group, much like Blackwater, that were employed and deployed on a contractual basis. And so, yeah, but, you know, it's just a sort of cynical recognition of the nature of the business of war.
Let me change up. I want to get to a couple more things. Are you aware of the TurboTax situation where people were lured into believing the television commercial saying you can get your taxes done for free with TurboTax, and so millions of Americans somehow got roped into, millions of Americans will receive money from Intuit, the maker of TurboTax, as part of a $141 million settlement between the Silicon Valley company and 50 states and the District of Columbia. The company will send up to $90 apiece to more than 4 million people who paid TurboTax software, even though they were eligible to receive it for free. What I want to ask you is, This was broadcast over television. I even saw it.
Mm-hmm.
You can get your taxes done for free just by, Sam, you aware of that?
Yeah, I've heard about this for
Turbo,
sure.
TurboTax, and we can get this done free.
I'm pretty sure that's how my boyfriend does his taxes, is downloading it early and getting it free.
So all of these people did this. It was a scam. It was a sham. How is that able to get on the airwaves, Sandy? You know, I mean, I know they paid to get on the airwaves, but aren't any of these things checked out before they...
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's these...
So the American people can be taking advantage...
Well, you turn on the cable networks or any of them that carry advertising.
Yeah, but this was regular television.
Well, but even on regular television, you get the one where you can buy the fishing reel for $29.99, but no, you can get actually two fishing reels for $29.99, and we'll throw in some magic fishing lures.
Hey, I bought something, you know... This is the greatest. Car wax,
yeah,
that you could ever have. And if you buy this, it's going to put the coat back on the car that was there when it was first bought. All you have to do is put. Well, they got me on that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Mr. Lindell, the pillow guy, the guy who supports Trump. I mean, you know, so there's all kinds of things on TV that are not exactly.
Does that come under buyer beware? Is that it?
Probably. And if the question here is, and the answer is that they went too far at TurboTax because it cost them $191 million, it sounds like, to settle out of the fact that they failed to tell people that you can buy it from us or you can download it for free from your various tax authorities.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll come to the phone lines after the break. 844-967-2789 is the number. Sandy's still here. Glad he's here. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone lines. And who is this again?
Gary from Sussex.
Who is that?
Well, I think you know me by now, hopefully.
Hey, okay. How you doing, Sandy's, Gary? Yeah, yeah. What's going on?
Sandy's getting to know me a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey.
The world knows Gary from Sussex. Go ahead.
I'm probably one of the most hated conservatives in Wisconsin because when I do call up, I get a lot of backlash after I hang up. But I can take it.
Hey, so let me say this to you. That's the route I took to get into radio. I used to call the conservative stations.
Yes, and you did.
Constantly,
talked to Jay Weber all the time.
You remember, right?
Oh, I'm a huge fan. That's how I heard about you when I didn't start calling until I heard you on the radio all the time, and then I heard you got your own show, so then I thought start calling. My
right.
daughter's a big fan. She actually turned me on to you, and you were the guest. I mean, you were the call-in person. You weren't even the DJ,
yeah.
the host.
All right. Okay.
Hey,
go ahead.
Okay, I have a comment. Last hour you had, I think it was the last caller of the last hour, the guy called up and he's talking about
from West Allis.
Eric
from West Allis.
Wauwatosa.
Oh, Wauwatosa. Right. I'm sorry.
And he had a question to ask somebody that's going to be on the show next week about how many people have ever gone to a stillborn child's
right.
funeral. Okay. Well, if you ask the right people, there's quite a few people, because if you ever had a child that was born stillborn, I guarantee you can have a little funeral, and you're going to have friends and family, just small, very small, because I've had two children that died as babies at 6 months along, and the only people who came were just, I just invited my mom and dad and my brothers and my sisters. Also, aborted children, we pulled out of Chicago, out of a dumpster, and we had like 2,000, and we buried them at Holy Cross Cemetery, and we have a huge monument there in the children's section. So I've gone to, and that's not the only one, so I've gone to quite a few children that never made it into life funerals. So if I was this guy, I'd be very careful who you ask, because I think there's a lot more than this young
so
man.
So, Gary, is it safe to say you are a supporter of your pro-life guy?
Obviously, yes.
And you don't think women have a right to their own bodies and their own decisions?
No, I believe that God creates life, and if you go out there and destroy this life that God has created, I think that you're going to have to answer the Almighty
when does human intervention in life begin? Is contraception a permitted intervention?
Well, see, Sandy, I'm a Christian, so I believe says in the Bible.
Yeah, yeah, but we got all different brands of Christianity.
Hey, Gary, you can't say the Bible says, because there are other books.
No, but I'm just asking Gary. So, do you think contraception is a permitted intervention, or is that not permitted?
No, I think using a condom is absolutely fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I know a lot of Catholics don't believe in, you know, prevention. No, I believe it.
Is the day after pill okay then? The day after pill would be before there was, I mean, there might or might not be a conception at that point. The conception doesn't happen
until sperm and ovum
and that can be several days after the act of coitus that creates the process of potential conception. So I'm just curious as to how far along the line we can go in terms of humans making choice about this question of whether they're going to play Russian roulette with the creation of a child.
Well, okay, this is how I see the thing is this. This is my opinion, and whether my opinion goes along with you guys is very wrong, and I respect your opinion, but my opinion is no abortion pills, nothing. If you want to use a condom, or if you use a birth control pills and stuff like that, you know, that's fine. But because I'm a Christian, there's places in the Bible that talks about, he says, I knew you while you were in the womb. I planned out every day of your life for good and not for evil. So God's talking about babies in the womb.
But Gary,
so
that's the government, okay, and I know Sam wants to respond, but the government and, you know, the rights for people and God, you can't have it all based on somebody's belief in God, because everybody's got their own different beliefs.
And I agree with that, and we should.
I guess there is this point I was saying earlier about the way people talk about abortion and to minimize it. I mean, I think the Catholic Church or whatever religious group or whatever group that wants to make abortion a process which is not allowed in the context of their belief system is free to try and persuade all of those who are within that belief system to adopt it and to not have abortions. But what's happening when we enact laws that restrict the rights of others to carry out this choice is to expand an interpretation you've made as a Christian from the Bible into a law that is imposed on people, whether or not they're Christian, whether they're Hindu, whether they're Buddhist, whatever their belief system might be. And I guess I have a problem with that.
Okay, Sandy, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
I have no idea how old you are, but let's say you have a daughter, and you're expecting your first grandchild, and you're all excited, and you tell your wife, and you're going out there, and all of a sudden you're going to have a reveal party. You find out that you have a grandson that's going to be, they're going to name him Matt or something like that, or Sandy, or whatever you're going to do. Here's a train, I'm sorry,
right,
by the real fact. But the fact is that all of a sudden your daughter decides, you know, at 8 months along, she decides, you know, I lost my job. My husband, he's whatever, he's a bum.
Sandy understands the scenario.
Yeah. So your point, at 8 months, nobody can choose to have an abortion at 8 months, incidentally. There is no law, there is no state that permits a chosen abortion without some perceived medical risk. That
all right, 24 weeks, which is, that's what they consider viable pregnancies now. 24 weeks. The baby can live outside the womb. Sandy, if it was at 22 weeks and this child.
So why don't you direct that? Why don't you direct that to Sam? Okay, direct that to Sam. She's a woman, and
well,
let her respond.
I think that's an interesting question. I think if my parents want another child, they can either adopt a child or have their own. But my body doesn't need to go through that personally if I decide that's not what I want. But that's
all right,
just me.
Let me ask you a question then. Do you think that, because I've been at many abortion clinics, do you believe that these girls that
go ahead.
Wait. So the girls that go to these abortion clinics and have these abortions, okay, so they say that they have a traumatic rape or something like that. Okay, so I can understand the thinking, but if you can go through that pregnancy and let people like me adopt, because I did adopt.
Okay, let's talk about how successful the whole foster care system is, because how many people that say, like you, are pro-life and actually do go out and adopt? Have you adopted any children yourself, sir?
No. Me?
Yes.
No.
Wait, what's it?
Yes, Gary, have you yourself adopted children?
Yes, we had two of my kids were going to be aborted, and we convinced the girls not to abort, and we adopted those two. We also had three pregnancies, two of my children.
So hold on, Gary.
Let me say this. Gary, hang on.
Wait a minute. Gary, we got to go to a break.
Son.
Gary, we'll give you a chance if you hang on. Okay?
Sure.
I think it's important enough a conversation that we'll carry you over on the other side. All right?
Thank you.
Because I know Sandy's got a few things he wants to respond to.
I'll be looking forward to hearing Sandy.
We'll be back. 844. Be right back.
Good God, y'all.
What is it good for?
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Say it again.
Lord. What is it good for?
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Listen to me.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us the same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And on the line is Gary from Sussex. Gary, Sam, I think you were responding to Gary, or it was Sandy. Which one was it?
No, I think it was Sam.
Yeah, okay. I was just, I love that you adopted Gary. I think that is amazing. I think that you have given, you know, those children a great life and everything like that. However, if that was the case 9 times out of 10, I guarantee you there would be less of a internal debate for women when it goes through this type of decision. However, that's just not the case. I mean, you look at the foster care system and you look at what people who have gone through that say about their experiences, and that's just not the typical story. You know, I don't think that is taken lightly when a woman is deciding these decisions. I think that these things are all very carefully thought through, and it's a hard decision no matter what side of this debate you side on, whether you call yourself pro-choice or pro-life.
And Gary, I think if we personalized it more and said, if I had a 13-year-old daughter, you tried to personalize the issue before of having a married daughter who decided to abort a child late in the pregnancy. Let's now theorize that I have a 13-year-old seventh grade daughter who is raped and becomes pregnant. And am I going to be required, and is she going to be required, to change her life and to take a risk of motherhood, at which at age 13 the risk of maternal death and childbirth is much greater than it would be if she was fully mature? And is that young woman going to be required to be the vessel for the birth of a child that was not only a surprise but the created by a crime which was traumatic enough to change her life forever, much less the challenge of the changing her life forever that would come from bearing a child, dropping out of her normal life during the period of pregnancy, and then undergoing the trauma of giving up a child that she had carried for that period of time. And I think it's just an astonishing position to believe that the victim of a crime should be required to carry on in that fashion. But, you know, I understand that your religious view of this is to the contrary.
even incestual. There are incestual relationships where, and I shouldn't say relationships, where inside her own family, she's been molested, and that she would have to go through that. Go ahead.
And I understand it, but you know, yesterday was my daughter's 37th birthday. We took her out to Briscoe County. We had a wonderful time with the grandkids and stuff like that. But I think back, my daughter came from a birth mom that was 14 years old. Now, this gal could have went through an abortion, but she chose to give us this child. Now, Sam said, Gary, you're such a good guy for adopting. No, we're the lucky ones.
Absolutely. This is a very fulfilling thing for the people like yourselves who do it. I think what she was saying is that the statistics don't support the notion that very many children born out of wedlock and unwanted end up in the wonderful kind of environment that you provided these children.
Exactly.
No
people
no
like
question.
To use the system, and that happens too often.
And Sandy, I think, quite frankly, that this work that Earl is doing for Voice of the Elders is working with a bunch of young people who undoubtedly were not born into the same kind of circumstances that you have provided for this foster child, this adopted child you've had, and they could have done far better if they had possibly been put into a foster or adopted system, but they didn't.
So I think
we just have to not use anecdotes as the examples of what it is that is happening out there in the world, because your anecdotes are really wonderful, and I commend you, and you obviously walk the walk as well as talking the talk.
Gary, I'm a treatment foster parent, as you well know, and there are far too many children left in the foster care system. They are everywhere. There are more children in the foster care system than there are people who stepped up. Go ahead.
I do have one point, and then I have to get going. I have to go to work. I'm a heating contractor.
Well, far be it from us to hold you up from going to your job.
No. But the fact is this. This is how I, since I've been such involved in the pro-life movement for such a long time, and the girls that go to the clinics and the girls that are the strongest believers in the pro-life are the girls who had abortions in the past and realize now that they're adults. Because they're my friends. These are my friends.
But again, you've got a small sphere of influence.
Earl, you got to let me just finish.
I know, but
okay?
I can't let you make statements that you can't back up. You're talking about just the ones you know, Gary.
Earl, right. And I said that before. My opinion and how I see things are how I see it. You see things differently. I don't think that you're wrong for you guys look a different way than I look. I'm looking
but
this
we
way,
can't let
that.
Your opinion, you know.
I'm basing my opinion. I'm not trying to tell anybody what to do.
Go ahead, Gary.
Just so you understand how we think. Okay, so Sandy said if he had a 13-year-old daughter. Okay, now let's say she went out there and went through the pregnancy and adopted this baby out to some couple. One out of six people can't have kids, the couples. Okay, so the traumatic rape that she went through, now she knows you can tell her, Sandy, you can tell your daughter that, you know what you did? I met somebody, this guy named Gary, and he is so excited that he adopted his daughter. You know what? The curse that happened to you now is turned into a blessing to someone else that you can smile and be very, very happy. If she got raped and then had an abortion, she's going to be getting the double whammy as she gets older. Trust me. If she goes through it, she doesn't want the baby. There's enough people out there like me and my friends that would adopt the baby.
As someone who was sexually assaulted in my past, I do not feel like that correlates at all, personally. I don't feel like, you know, if anything, you see that child and you're just reminded of the event, personally. But I understand where you're coming from.
Hey Gary.
But if you know this baby's adopted out and this person has this child, let's say they can't have kids and now they're a parent. Okay, go ahead.
Gary, thank you very much for the call, man.
You're welcome.
Get back to work. All right. But see, here's where, you know, all of this goes. Here's an article. Louisiana GOP rushes to classify abortion as homicide. Excuse me. And mothers could potentially potentially be charged. That's what's at the root of a lot of these things, Sandy, and Sam. The fact that you've got people, unfortunately, on the GOP who want to classify abortion as homicide.
Well, I think Sam is a really good spokesperson for this because, Gary has a point. Gary's a middle-aged man, right? Maybe a older than middle-aged man.
Yeah, he's my age.
Men aren't asked to go through the process of
thank you so much for saying
bearing
that.
Bearing a child and carrying a child.
True.
So
the woman is put through all of it, whether it be even like you said, charged potentially for homicide. Not only that, she has to carry the pregnancy. She has to deal with the judgment. Let's say she is 14. You think all of her classmates are going to be kind to her and not judge her for being pregnant? Even if it was a sexual assault, even if it was, you know, not her fault. Do you think people will see it like that?
Well, I think that, you know, so men are forced to look at this theoretically. It's easy for them to look at it ideologically and liturgically, but it's a far different issue for women, and it's a far different issue for the very woman who's involved with the circumstance, and it certainly is a far different issue for a 13 or 14-year-old victim of either incest or rape. And so it's an extraordinary thing to me to hear men make arguments on a theoretical basis. I mean, Gary has some wonderful anecdotes to describe about how he has participated in the process. But to generalize from that, to suggest that every person put in this circumstance should be forced to bear through the full pregnancy and carry all of the consequences through to the ultimate issues and problems that result is an extraordinary position.
You know, Sandy, many of us, the brethren of men, are kind of Cro-Magnon-like knuckle draggers when it comes to this kind of thing, because we'll say, I hear guys say, well, she couldn't have had the baby without me. And so all of this is equal. I'm tired of hearing women say that, you know, as if they can have babies all alone. And I said, hey, man, let me ask you something. Do you carry the baby in your womb?
Yeah. Men get.
Do you?
Yeah, I would say men get high and women have the hangover.
Yeah.
that's how much they participate in this process.
So, but you hear guys say, well, you know, I said, man, that child is developing inside of the woman. Her relationship with the development of the child and the bonding is, you know, I mean, it's just by its nature different than yours and mine. I can't argue with my wife about, you know, having carried a child, you know, to 9 months.
Right.
Or even not. But those decisions, it's clearly she's got bigger decisions to make than I on that.
No question about it. That's why I think Tom from L.A. is probably right about this, that the whole discussion has been framed in the wrong way, and it ought to just simply focus on women and women's choice and the decisions that women should be able to make about things that are so very personal and important to them.
You know, we've got to go to a break, and when we come back, Sandy, I want to talk with you about something we talked about a little earlier before we move back into the abortion realm, and that's what should we expect as citizens of this nation from our government when we are taken advantage of so many times. I was asked you about TurboTax and whether or not they were able to do that, and yet should we have expected something? Should we expect more from our government in the way of protections from being taken advantage of? You know, I recall, you know, having bought insurance policies that, you know, why is it that we have to read the small print that Sandy understands because it's written in legalese?
You mean the one that tells you that the Brooklyn Bridge? It's not fundamentally for sale.
Yeah, and that whatever it is you pay, your name's not going to be on it.
Yeah.
Even though, well, somebody told me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And you know, Sandy, it wasn't that long ago. Let's see. 3 hours have flown by. It wasn't that long ago you and I were trying to do a show for 1 hour, remember?
Mm-hmm.
By the time we would get started.
That was like putting 3 pounds in a 1 pound bag.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking about it. Because right now, here's a subject that certainly could take an hour or more to discuss. And that's, you know, what role does our government play in protecting the citizens from being taken advantage of? And I've been taken advantage of, you know, read the small print.
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of ways that the government is there and should be there, and to the extent it isn't there, to protect the citizenry against problems in commerce. Some of them are the Food and Drug Administration to protect people against unsafe food and unsafe drugs, to protect people
against...
But there
aren't enough of them to cover all of
them. And to protect people against suggestions that drugs can do things they can't do. And then you go over into the general world of commerce, and you know there's a fraud being perpetrated probably every minute on the internet,
right,
with respect to these goofy ads that are being run. And in many ways, the marketplace is left to regulate itself, and that people need to be sufficiently educated to avoid fraud. Almost every state, certainly the state of Wisconsin, has a consumer fraud division in their attorney general's office that is supposed to take up complaints and pursue fraudulent activity. There's a great deal of difficulty, one, in the legal red tape that's involved with bringing a legal action and then succeeding in the legal action. Most of them settle with the alleged perpetrator, and the perpetrator pays less than the amount that they actually got out of it. So you were describing earlier in the show the TurboTax issue, and that they were sending $30 a head back to the people that were supposedly bilked out of, I think, $90 payments. So that was just a fraction of,
right,
of the amount that they got, that they realized from
and
it.
And they didn't get penalized.
Well, they had to give up the fruits of what they did. Maybe the finding of it was maybe that it wasn't for, I don't know, you know, the problem with legal processes is that they get adjudicated. There's lots of fine print to be read in the laws as well. And you have to find fault, and you have to prove fault. So, you know, it's hard to protect people against all the potential frauds that could exist. You know, Elizabeth Warren was very concerned about fraud in the financial markets. And there was created in the office, and I can't remember if it was in the office of the Federal Reserve or it was in an office of a bank regulatory process that included the regulation of consumer finance, and that office was carried through and under Obama, and then it was removed by Trump. The view being that apparently the government shouldn't be involved in protecting consumers from financial fraud. So, I mean, there's a bit of a partisan aspect to this. The Republicans have been very strongly anti-regulation, and a lot of the regulations that they've been against have been regulations which were there to protect Tom, Dick, and Mary from the abuses potentially of business. So, you know, my personal view is that business should be seeking adequate and appropriate regulation by the government so that there can be a great deal of faith in the marketplace, and that fair and honest participants in the marketplace can thrive without the cynical fears of the marketplace that they're being cheated. And so, you know, regulation is a good thing for markets, but unfortunately, the people who might be regulated have a fair amount of influence on K Street and with lobbyists, and a great deal of regulation has been lifted.
So, Sandy, Monday I want to delve deeper into this because about, you know, maybe 20 years ago I had a stent put in. And at the time they were talking about these mesh stents that they were using.
Right.
And you find out later on that there's something wrong with the mesh implants and that they cause some other problems down the road. And so we had no control over what the doctor said. Well, you've got a blockage. We need to put this.
Well, I mean, the FDA had approved those stents. There has been follow-on class action litigation about those stents. And the legal process has tried to deal with the mistakes that were made in the process of either the approval or the manufacture or the design of those stents. But like I say, it's complicated. And I would say that the stent issue you've talked about is not so very directly a fraudulent conduct as so much as it was maybe a negligence.
Negligence, you're an attorney. I'm not. Yeah. I'm an average person. But I think that if what was happened occurred and there was negligence and then there was a class action suit by attorneys,
yeah,
who then contacted people like myself and said, hey, we've got a class action suit. If you have a stent, contact us, and we'll be able to do something to give you some
financial relief.
And then when all of this is done, they send you a check for $100, and the attorneys get all of the. I mean, all of those things, Sandy, just don't seem to be kosher. You know what I mean?
The world ain't so fair.
No, that's my point.
Yeah.
My point is, what about the citizens?
Well, I mean,
you know, I mean, I understand protecting the businesses and all of that, but at the end of all of it, what did Tom say? We, the people, are the government? I don't think so.
Well, I mean, you know, now we're getting down to sort of, we'll go to law school on Monday.
We need to have that.
I mean, you know, there's a difference between, because the government was involved with the stents. For whatever it's worth, whether the regulation was well carried out or not, the FDA approved the stents for the use for which they were proposed. The stent was probably installed in you for that same use, which was in lieu of a bypass.
Right.
It was, and it turned out that there was an engineering defect associated, or design defect associated with the stent and materials. And so, okay, now how do we solve for that? How do various places solve for that? And the government typically gets involved in processes which are criminal, and the civil problems, other than the civil wrongs that are carried out against the government, are normally pursued by private individuals in litigation. That's the way the American process breaks down.
How is it possible that we as citizens, mm-hmm, are held accountable for whatever we do to affect someone else, and they can sue us?
Yeah.
And yet, well, you sued
the stent manufacturer. Well, I mean, why didn't they sue the FDA for the process of negligently approving the stents?
And not just that, but I mean, many instances like that. How come they can't be held?
Well, there is, again, law school class. But the government can be held accountable, but it's more complicated. They have these. They have a certain level of immunity. But their sovereign immunity is not complete. So, you know, there have been extensive and very expensive litigations pursued against the government to recover money. It's a much more difficult process.
So we've got to go, Sandy. But I want to make sure we go to 101. Because I've been worrying and thinking about these things for a long, long time. We got the right guy to address it. Gotta go. Thank you, Sandy, as always. Have a great weekend. Go Bucks.
Yeah, you're wearing a Bucks hat. This guy that he bailed out on the Bucks about.
Hey, we gotta go. We gotta go. Sam, have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.